You're listening to the ISF Podcast, for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Financial due diligence is common practice when companies merge or one business acquires another. Cybersecurity due diligence, however, is not quite as common. Yet in a world where the threat landscape changes by the day and risk is growing increasingly complex, solid cybersecurity practices are more important than ever. Today, Steve and I dig into this very topic, and more specifically, what role cybersecurity has in a merger or an acquisition. How is a cybersecurity review done? Why are such reviews so important? How do we balance speed with thoroughness? How do we interpret the results? There's a lot to unpack here, so let's dive right in. Steve, can you explain briefly what it looks like to do a cybersecurity review as part of a traditional due diligence during M&A or during investment?
Sure. In an M&A or investment context, a cybersecurity review is really a critical part of that overall technical due diligence. Its goal is to just assess how secure the target company or organization is and how much risk the buyer or the investor is going to be inheriting should they then proceed. The review has a number of different component parts to it. So the first one is governance and policies. So you want to really check to see whether or not there are security policies in place. Now, of course, depends very much on the size of the organization you're talking about. If it's a decent sized acquisition, then you would absolutely expect that to be there and indeed for it to be offered up. Smaller organizations, you may need to ask some of these questions and dig in a little bit more detail. But certainly, first of all, have they got any security policies? Secondly, as part of that review, do they have a chief information security officer or somebody who's formally accountable for security? And then are they using different frameworks, you know, like NIST or like ISO or like the ISF standard good practice? That's the sort of governance and policy high level review that you'd look at first. Then you'd move more into the technical controls. And this really focuses on things like, how's the data being protected? Are there endpoint or network, cloud security, for instance, tools in place? And what kind of identity and access management systems do they have? Are they mature? You know, we're seeing a lot of breaches taking place now through immature IAM systems. Mm-hmm. So worth just taking a look at that. That leads quite nicely then into things like vulnerability and threat analysis. Have they had any incidents in the past? Have they had any breaches? What's their penetration testing history like? You know, have they been doing pen testing? Again, mm-hmm. You know, some of these things you would absolutely expect in a decent sized organization. Compliance, let's not forget that. Regulatory risk, you know, are they subject to things like GDPR if they're operating across the European Union or handling data from the European Union? HIPAA in the healthcare space, those sorts of things. And always a question that you should ask, and sometimes it causes raised eyebrows, but you know, are there any active investigations or legal risks ongoing related to cybersecurity? You'd probably be asking some of these anyway through the M&A deal team, but you want to be specific in the cyber space. And then one really not to forget is third party. So is there anything going on with third parties or vendor risk that could impact compliance in the space? And then finally, you want to check that they've actually got some form of business continuity and incident response. So have they been testing disaster recovery, for instance? What's the maturity of their backup and recovery infrastructure? So what you're trying to do with some fairly high-level questions is just get a feel for whether or not there are any cybersecurity weaknesses there that can impact the valuation or cause you regulatory liabilities, or worst case, you know, even be deal breakers if the risks are just too high.
That's a lot to think about. So whose responsibility is it ideally? Who owns cybersecurity due diligence? Is it legal, risk, IT? Do you bring in outside consultants? What's the best approach for that leadership team?
You can bring in outside consultants, but really the ownership of this due diligence process during an M&A or investment, it's all about how you play nicely across your deal team. So you need to have somebody that is the primary owner of the cyber piece, and that's going to be someone from the risk or the information security function. Why? Because they're going to have the technical understanding to evaluate some of the threats or the vulnerabilities that you may come up against. And so the best sort of job title fit is probably the CISO. Could be a cyber risk lead. As I say, if you don't have some of these people, you know, the expertise in-house, then you could use a third-party cybersecurity firm. Lots of people out there able to do this. ISF can do it as well, of course, but lots of people out there who can do it. But then you need, you know, I said before, it's a team game. You need to have legal and compliance involved. You need to have the IT and technology guys there. And you need to have your corporate risk people there too, because what you're trying to do, as I said before, is to assess how security risk could affect valuation. And of course, you know, we shouldn't forget post-deal integration as well. It's a team game, but from a cyber perspective, you really want somebody leading that who understands the space.
Is there anyone who absolutely should not go solo on that?
I would say that you can't play a team sport without a team. And for me, M&A is a team game.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't go it alone. I think it would be a mistake for somebody to think that they could do this kind of work solo.
Right.
Because as we've seen with cyber maturing, it now touches so many different parts of the organization. You do need to be involved. Just legal, you know, let's just take that as one piece.
Right.
Didn't used to see being as involved. Regulatory landscape, we've talked about many, many times, is this sort of patchwork quilt of problems. And when you are getting into M&A or indeed just investment, you really want to make sure that you've covered off all of these different angles, because of course it can be very expensive if you don't.
Acquisitions are fast paced often. These deals are moving quickly. So how do you balance thoroughness and speed when you're doing a potential M&A?
That is a good question, because as you say, very often you do have to move at speed. So when timing's really tight, I think the key thing is to prioritize on a risk basis. So you would look at the high impact, high risk areas first. So you would prioritize things like, have there been past breaches or active threats that you're concerned about? Mm. What about things like data protection, access controls? I mentioned those before. The regulatory piece, the third parties. So really make sure that if you do nothing else, you know, you cover those off first. Because what you're trying to do is to assess, I suppose, a number of things. The first thing is that the crown jewel that you are buying or merging with mm-hmm. is and has been kept secure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you go first. If you've got more time, then you can start to go in other places, like really get into some of the things that security people like to look at. So do they have multi-factor authentication in place? Smaller organizations, I would say probably not.
Right.
So with some of these things that we're moving into talking about now, you know, you're going to have to make a judgment call along the way as to whether or not that is a major issue for you. For me, when I've been doing these things, it's really more about having your list of critical areas that impact a deal go, no go. And then you have more advisory areas where you would probably want either the company that you're acquiring, if time, or indeed your own team post-acquisition to focus on to make sure that it's right. I'll give you an example, one that I did not that long ago. We were concerned about some of the GDPR issues there. Wasn't a major thing, wasn't a deal breaker or a deal stopper, but it did pop up on a list of then remedial activities that needed to take place. And indeed, there was a discussion around whether or not that would impact deal price and valuation because of the amount of work that might be needed to be done post-deal, post-acquisition. So
right.
You're trying to just highlight some of these things right at the beginning.
How thorough do you need to be? I hear you saying prioritize. Look at what's an absolute deal breaker. Look at what can be wrapped into the process. But when you're trying to get a clear look at a potential acquisitions or an investment security systems, really, how much do you need to look under the hood?
I think you've got to be appropriate. I would always say that. I mean, you know, if I look back over the years, probably going back, 15, 16 years, I guess, when I was doing a lot of acquisition work, we would never involve cybersecurity.
Hmm.
Never involve.
What a sea change.
Absolutely. Because it would get in the way. You
right.
know? It wasn't as critical. Now, of course, you would be foolish not to involve
right.
The cyber guys, because everything is so interlinked. And we're talking about data at the end of the day. You know, every business is really sort of thriving on that. So times have changed. The really short answer to your question is that the depth of study should be appropriate for the deal size, for the risk profile, and indeed apply some industry sensitivity to it as well. So if you're in a highly regulated industry, you're going to have to go much deeper
right.
in some of those areas. If you're, say, acquiring somebody in the healthcare sector, you're going to want to understand how they've been handling sensitive data. You're going to want to understand whether or not there has been any regulatory exposure, whether or not there have been any breaches. You know, we've seen, particularly in the healthcare space, you know, we've seen quite a lot of activity there from bad actors. So you just need to be aware of some of these things, but it's about the appropriate level. And I think, again, you know, as a minimum, it's the areas we've just been talking about, the policies, the access controls and so on. And then if you've got, you know, a very much higher value deal or it's high risk, you do want to go into things like access. You do absolutely want to understand the cloud security configurations. Mm-hmm. Lots of people forget that one, but you need to be looking at that. You need to understand what level of protection is up in the cloud. And you want to get a better understanding as well of some of the third-party risk and the different levels of third-party that exist within that overall company ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And you may want to go into some detail. If it's a critical part of the business, you know, you will want to understand exactly how the supply chain is being secured.
Right. You've already touched on potential for valuation shifts based on what one uncovers in this audit. Talk to us more about that. Are there frameworks that investors might be able to use to quantify this when they're doing their due diligence? How should they think about valuation?
Yeah, I mean, valuation is always an interesting piece of the deal. I mean, anybody who's listening to this who's been involved in deals will know that valuation always leads to some interesting discussions. But cyber risk can have a direct impact on valuation. You know, just some of the ways that it can cause adjustments would be increased liability exposure, for instance, you know, data breaches and non-compliance of regulations. That can lead to fines, lawsuits, and that can be millions. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about pennies here. So that could be a cause for a valuation adjustment. Revenue risk would be another one. You know, if there's a platform that's being used that's insecure, that might lose customers or fail to pass audits, again, that's a biggie. Operational risk, you'd want to look at in detail if there were bad backups, poor patch hygiene, because then you're going to suffer from things like downtime risk, which is just going to get in the way as you try to move on beyond acquisition. And then the last one I'd call out that really does affect valuation is technical debt. You know, we do see a lot of legacy systems in particularly larger organizations. And so you need to be really careful about understanding what level of security has been applied to these perhaps outdated or highly complex systems. Because that can increase the post-close integration cost and indeed give rise to red flags as well. So you want to do all of that. And then the question that people tend to ask me is, well, how? What framework can you use? And there's a number of those out there. You can use, so NIST, for instance, has got the risk maturity model. It's very popular. You can use cyber risk scoring tools, people like BitSight or Security Scorecard. Sometimes a lot of people like to do that. You can also use some of the tools that we have, for instance, at the ISF around risk assessment to take a good look at that, or our standard good practice looking at all of the different frameworks and so on. But those are the sorts of things that you need to be looking at. That will all be information that gets fed into ultimately the valuation and any necessary adjustment. And if you do want to adjust it, of course, you're going to have to explain that. The seller is obviously going to have a view as to what their company is worth. So we shouldn't forget that this is all really good input into the negotiation that inevitably takes place.
How would you recommend that organizations that don't already have this process or this thinking in place start to build it into their due diligence pipeline?
I think, again, it's about not really trying to overcomplicate. So start simple and then scale. Mm-hmm. So right at the beginning, assign some form of ownership. Who's going to be the lead? Is it the CISO? Is it risk manager? Involve them in the overall M&A deal team. Get them involved right from the beginning. Don't try and think you can bolt it on later. Seen some deals go bad because of that.
Right.
Because particularly if you're trying to move quickly and suddenly you introduce the cyber guy at the back end and they've got to go right the way back to the beginning.
Right.
Because systems data are so integral in what we do that you have to get these things done right at the beginning. So I think involve the owner, if you like, of the cyber piece. Mm-hmm. Do have a repeatable checklist for cyber that is baked into your playbook. Mm-hmm. So all deal teams have got playbooks. Just make sure you've got a cyber piece in there that looks at the policies, the data protection, regulation, those sorts of things. And then also integrate cyber risk into the valuation and deal documents. You want those sorts of things, the warranties and so on, added into the term sheet. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You do want to be considering any of the risk-based adjustments we've been talking about here in the valuation models. And then do build in as well, right at the beginning, any post-close remediation plans that you think you're going to have to be putting in place so you don't lose them.
Right.
Because again, once the deal moves towards close, people tend to get quite excited and you just want to make sure that all of these things have been baked in right from the beginning.
It occurs to me, I wonder how many more years we will be talking about incorporating security from the start of a process rather than tacking it on at the end, because we've been talking about that for years, whether it's in creation of a business or a product, and now in the context of M&A. So it's cyber has to be at the start of everything. And I think people are getting it, but we're still having this conversation and reminding people of the importance. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right, Tavor. I think people are getting it. What I'm seeing now is people get it, but they don't know how to do it. That's where the cyber professional really now has to step up.
Right.
Because it isn't so much now about, as you say, making the noise about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about we've moved on to the how, and it's not easy.
What are some of the risks that investors may be taking if they're not participating in this due diligence?
It can expose investors to huge risks across financial, legal, operational, reputational areas. Just some of the examples. So they could be inheriting hidden breaches or vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So they could be buying a company that's already been breached, or is importantly currently compromised. There have been some of those out there.
Hmm.
You have to always keep at the back of your mind, am I really doing a solid evaluation here? Or could there be undetected ransomware around somewhere? Could there be some form of unauthorized data access? And of course, the bigger the organization, the bigger the organizational ecosystem, the more complex and difficult this becomes to really try to look into. So that's the first piece. I think underestimating some of the regulatory and the legal liability. So if, for instance, the target is mishandling PII or regulated data, then you inherit exposure to fines and lawsuits and investigations.
Right.
Again, just worth bearing in mind that some of these investigations can take a very long time. It isn't just about money. It's about the distraction that it causes to any post-integration work, and it can wipe out the benefit, short-term benefit, that you were hoping to derive from an acquisition. Post-acquisition tech debt, I mentioned that slightly earlier, and so integration headaches. So weak cyber today often does point to maybe broader infrastructure issues, perhaps outdated systems, shadow IT, sloppy development practices, and that's costly. I mentioned reputational damage.
Right.
It sounds obvious, but once you've acquired a company, it's your name that's then on the door.
Right.
And so anything that goes wrong, your name is in the headline, and that can get messy very, very quickly. And I suppose the final thing is you don't want to miss an opportunity to price in risk or adjust the deal terms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying with any of these things that you wouldn't necessarily still go ahead, but you'd probably make some form of adjustment in terms of the valuation or put into escrow a certain amount of money until things were fixed. Lots of different options that you look at there. It doesn't always mean that you don't go ahead with the acquisition. You're just trying to do it with your eyes open.
Have you seen cases where liabilities that are uncovered after the deal have led to post-acquisition regret or fallout or litigation? And are there obvious red flags in hindsight that the acquirers should have been more aware of?
Yeah, there have been a few. There have been some very big ones a few years ago that tended to hit the headlines. We don't see as many hitting headlines now. That doesn't mean to say they're not taking place, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But ones that spring to mind, Marriott and Starwood,
mm-hmm.
You've got to go back to 2018 there, where post-acquisition Marriott found a multi-year data breach in Starwood systems.
Oof.
And the attackers there have been lurking for 4 years.
Wow.
So, when people think that attackers come onto your network and they're just there, quickly in, quickly out, they're not.
Right.
They're living with you for a number of years. The fallout from that was a GDPR fine. That was about $24 million. Plus, of course, any of the associated long-term brand and customer trust damage could have been avoided. That's the thing. If they had picked up on some of the red flags, like Starwood didn't have any centralized security controls, There was a lack of vulnerability management. There was weak access control across some of the acquired IT assets that they had. So these are all the sorts of things that somebody should have looked at and gone, hold on, I need to dig a bit deeper.
Right.
That's one. Another very, very big one that was very expensive was Yahoo and Verizon. So after Verizon had agreed to acquire Yahoo for almost $5 billion, Yahoo disclosed two breaches that were affecting 1.5 billion user accounts.
Wow.
So Verizon knocked $350 million off the deal and required some post-close cost sharing for the breach fallout. Again, red flags were things like incomplete disclosure, past incidents, weak incident response, poor historical logging, poor forensics capability. So I'd like to think that we've moved beyond that now, but some of the numbers we're talking about here are quite eye-watering. And that's just in fines and costs. Now, that doesn't even begin to quantify time, resource that's required to fix
reputation. Something.
And reputation, indeed. You really have to make sure that, as best you can anyway, that you're going into these things with your eyes open.
In the context of M&A, have you seen successful models or successful approaches for pricing in those cyber risk discount rates during valuation? Especially if you're dealing with a company that's operating, as you've pointed out earlier, in a highly regulated or a high-risk sector?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, you appreciate this is also still an area that's continuing to mature. So there isn't sort of one size fits all out there. But there are some emerging models and smart ways of doing it where deal makers are really using them to turn cyber risk into something of a quantifiable input in evaluation. Just some ways of doing it. So adjusting valuation with a cyber risk discount. I actually quite like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So if major security gaps are found, you know, acquirers apply a discount rate. Can be anything that's reasonable. So I've seen between 5% at the low end percent, and I've seen up to 20% at the higher end.
Wow.
It's just to reflect the cost of remediation and the increased risk exposure. And you can structure that how you like. So, you know, you could have perhaps a lower upfront valuation. I mentioned earlier escrow. So that's certainly one of the things you can have holdbacks that are tied to remediation milestones, or even deferred or earn out based on cybersecurity performance. That one's a little bit more difficult, but certainly the front two, the lower valuation and the escrow or the holdbacks I've seen, they're becoming quite common. Some of the other things that are out there, insurance-driven risk pricing, that's another quite interesting one that's starting to become more common now, where you can look at cyber insurance underwriting reports that look at risks and help investors model premium increases or deductible events. I'm not such a fan on that because not everybody, of course, has cyber insurance and you need to be able to access some of these things. But buyers do sometimes require cyber insurance as a condition of closing. So we've seen that coming in now and pricing the policy cost into the deal, which is what you would perhaps expect. I think with where we're going with all of this is that as the whole cyberspace matures and as organizations get very much more aware of what's going on in this fast-moving space, we are able and we're starting to see quantification of cyber risk. Cyber risk does have a price. And again, you know I've been saying this a lot, but it doesn't mean that the deal doesn't happen.
Right.
It means that you're realistic about what's going to be involved in making it successful post-acquisition.
Technology is constantly evolving. We know cyber attackers, we know, become more advanced every day. How do you recommend that firms keep their due diligence processes up to date in such a rapidly changing environment?
Some really simple things you can do here. So the first thing, absolutely, regularly update the diligence playbook. So cyber threats change very fast, as we know. And so the process needs to reflect that. So you need to set some form of cadence. I'd recommend at least quarterly for your due diligence framework. Need to involve, again, all of the stakeholders, make sure everyone's having input into that. So regularly update that playbook. Look at things like your threat intelligence and external benchmarks that are out there. Use the different threat feeds to stay ahead of attacker tactics. Look at some of the scoring tools around their BitSight or Security Scorecard, for instance, and really try to understand how the whole space is shifting. Look at things like AI. AI-driven tools can really quickly analyze documentation like security policies or logs or compliance audits. You know, you can get that job done very, very quickly. And so keeping abreast of what it is that AI can actually do and what it can bring to the party in this piece is really important. But don't forget about the people. You've got to train the field teams.
People? when we've got AI?
AI is not going to do that for you. You know, train the legal team on how to spot cyber clauses. Train the financial modelers that you're using on risk-adjusted pricing. You know, and we've covered off some of that. Train the deal team, the deal leads in particular, on some of the cyber risk signals to look out for that we've just been talking about. And again, depending on how active you are in this space, you may want to set up an external panel of experts or advisory partners, you know, that just challenge some of your assumptions from time to time, review some of the red flags they've seen from recent deals. And so that you're really getting the best advice, I suppose, is the way I'd put it, that's up to the minute on what is going on in this particular space. Because again, I know I'm saying it over and over, but cyber is a really fast moving space.
Yeah.
And unless you're working in that space, you're not necessarily going to be best equipped to pick up on all of the little nuances that we're starting to see creep in here.
What do you think the most important practices are that enterprises can implement to mitigate cyber threats during an acquisition or an investment?
I've said some of them, but I think pre-deal, I think it is about being focused. It's about identifying, prioritizing the high-risk areas that are out there that you want to look into. It's about doing things like making sure that the governance is there. It's about scanning for some of the known vulnerabilities. If you're in one particular market sector and you're buying a company in another because of expansion growth, you're going to need to be covering off a whole range of different things that perhaps might be unusual for you because you haven't been having to look into those areas. So I think, again, taking that sort of broad brush approach to what are the important things as you go in is hugely important. I think that when it comes to some of the more detailed stuff, like the term sheet, for instance, you want to really lock in cyber representations, warranties. You want things in there that talk about disclosure, past breaches or audit failures even. You want things in the term sheet around the commitments, around data protection practices, requirements to maintain specific security standards, pre-close.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing some of this due diligence and then, of course, you're going to go away and then you're going to come back and eventually close the deal or not. I always like to see as well some form of integration plan that's done at the outset. So where you're just defining simple things like access control transitions, a lot of organizations now are storing their data up in the cloud.
Mm.
So you need to have a way of accessing that data from day one,
right?
Post-acquisition. Sounds simple. People forget some of these things. And then I think as well, you know, you want to be really digging into perhaps some high-risk vendors or vendors that are operating in high-risk areas,
mm-hmm.
particularly at the moment, you know, with all the talk about tariffs and so on around the world. If your supply chain is over in China, you probably want to take a good look at that and just understand better what some of the implications might be and play out different scenarios. So I think that the most effective acquirers don't just check for some form of cyber risk. What they do is they plan to control it. They will be creating different scenarios. They will be looking at different elements of governance and putting where they can all of those things into the term sheets, into the contracts, so that they're covered.
Right. Do you think that there are red flags in a target company's IT infrastructure or their security culture that would obviously warrant a deeper dive, but immediately pause a deal or stop a deal?
Yeah, I think, again, we have to look at proportionality. That's hugely important. But certainly some of the red flags that could point to other things, multi-factor authentication, is it there? Really easy to put in place. The company hasn't got it. Could be a good reason, but you don't want to ask why.
Mm-hmm.
Past breaches, yeah, most organizations at some point are going to have a breach. But were there any that weren't remediated in some way or shape or form? You know, if there's a bit of a history of data breaches or ransomware, but there's no documented remediation, then you've still got that risk because you don't know what was done.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that actually, when I'm on the other side, the seller side, I do encourage companies to actually disclose voluntarily.
Mm.
It is so much easier if you're the seller to be front foot with some of these things. You don't want someone to dig around and then it look as if you've been hiding something. If sellers are listening and they've got some of these things in the cupboard, my advice is get it out as soon as possible, put it on the table, because then, you know, at least you're coming at it from a perceived position of trust and integrity.
Yeah.
Some other things that would be red flags, no security leadership, particularly if you're in a mid-sized to large organization. Small organization, I wouldn't worry so much about it, but I would want to see that there was some level of accountability for security.
Yeah.
And then I'm assuming that everybody has got some form of documented security policy or an incident response plan. If it isn't there, that's a fairly big one that you will want to dig into. And then just about, you know, the people, the culture. What's the sort of feel in the organization for things like passwords, security awareness training, you know, those sorts of things, because you're going to want to get a good feel for that as well. And again, it doesn't mean with any of these things that you necessarily walk away, but it just does mean that you pause, perhaps dig a little bit deeper, look into it a bit more closely. And in certain instances, of course, they will be deal breakers, and that's fine. You want to know, you want to identify those as quickly as possible so that you're not wasting people's time.
Do you see a future where a cybersecurity audit becomes as common as a financial audit in M&A?
I'd like to think so. As I said before, you know, when I first started doing these sorts of things, we didn't consider cyber. Now you'd be foolish not to. But I think there are some other things that have been going on as well. Digital assets now do have a core value in most deals these days. The biggest value driver isn't just physical, it is digital. So particularly around things like data and so on. And so if you are in that kind of line of business, you're going to have to be conducting cyber audits. Breaches, of course, they continue to happen and will continue to do so. Do they kill deals? I wouldn't have said so necessarily, but they certainly come with a very hefty price tag associated with them. So you'd want to make sure that you'd covered that one off. You've also got just the changing landscape when it comes to regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you're in a highly regulated industry, I don't think you could get away without doing some form of cyber audit these days. So it is changing. And I think, again, boards of directors are also, as I said at the beginning, much more aware. They just don't know how to go about doing some of these things. So again, if you're in the cyber industry, there's a lot of open doors that you can just push on now to really get much more involved in terms of how you can add value to business direction, business strategy.
I want to revisit the point that I made before, that cyber is taking its proper position as in the center of the organization. It's no longer on the outside, a second layer of thought or consideration. This thinking about valuation and due diligence really properly positions cyber as a key component, as important as any other part of those core values and core processes. So I think this is really a helpful conversation for enterprises of all sizes to be thinking about. Even if they're not looking to be acquired or this isn't on their horizon, these best practices make sense for leaders to be thinking about regardless.
They do. And, you know, I would also encourage another group of leaders who perhaps have aspirations to sell their businesses or float their businesses, because if you've got something like a 2 to 3 to 5 year exit strategy in mind, then you want to be making sure that your cyber hygiene is as high as possible from the start. It's a lot easier to do then than as you approach that exit point that you've been working so hard for. So even if you're not involved in this kind of stuff today, worth just going through some of the things we've been talking about to make sure that it doesn't come around and bite you further down the track.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time and walking us through this valuable conversation, as always.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
We'll be back with another new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. And we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.